fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. Hey, it's a Friday, man. Pat yourself on the back. You made it finally to the end of the week. I'm excited. You're excited. I scream, you scream, we all scream for Joe Biden not to be in office anymore. That's what I'm screaming for today. Welcome into it. So wonderful to have you along for the ride as usual. And we have one heck of a show lined up. So much to talk about, so little time to do it. This is the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier, broadcasting out of the heart of the nation here in Wichita, Kansas, on our flagship radio station, the Big Talker, KQAM. We are all over the country, though. Multiple radio stations and TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you watch or listen. Welcome aboard your millennial general reporting for duty like we do every single day. Coming up on the program, a bit of an interesting conversation. Jason Jones, author of the book, The Great Campaign Against the Great Reset. We'll have him on in just a little bit. We'll talk about the support that he believes, as Christian conservatives that we are, that we should be supporting Ukraine a little bit more so than what we're hearing out of Washington, D.C. Now, that being said, we have not heard a lot out of Washington regarding a funding bill for Ukraine and or Israel. We are working through the appropriation bills. The last that I've heard, which we'll double take throughout the program today because they're trying to finish a lot of these up, is that we have now, Washington, D.C. has now officially passed 11 of the 12 appropriation bills, which, holy cow, man. Whoa. Slow that roll, yo. Now, just a reminder for you and a refresher that the 12 appropriation bills consist of roughly 30% of our entire federal budget, 20 to 30%. The rest of it's the mandatory spending. We don't touch it. We're not allowed to revamp it. We're not allowed to look at it. We're not allowed to cut the spending or try to reform it. You can't do anything. That's the social programs that just continuously grow every single year. And if you try to cut them, then you're obviously the worst person in the world, wanting elderly and sick people to die in the streets without any care. So that's 80% of the budget. So the 30% we are allowed to touch is the appropriations, is the actual discretionary funding. The one appropriations bill that at least I've heard that we have not passed yet is the Department of Homeland Security. You know, like the most important one with our funding for the military or funding for security in the nation. And that one apparently is not. And they're working on some tweaks to it. Apparently, the conversation didn't go well, and we've now considered passing a continuing resolution for the rest of the fiscal year on that piece of the appropriations bill, but we've passed everything else. What the details look like, I'm not sure yet. We'll get some congressmen and elected officials on to talk about the details of some of these appropriation bills to see how well that we've done. First and foremost, we should at least be somewhat proud of the fact that we passed any appropriation bills, because this is, again, the first time that we've done so since the Barack Obama administration. So it's been a while since we've actually passed an actual federal budget with appropriations. We're working in the good step, but did it actually cut any spending or get us back on track? We'll figure out the details as that moves along. So we have that conversation right now. We have, but out of all that, I have not heard of any conversation included in there regarding Ukrainian and Israeli funding. I know Joe Biden and the Democrats are now apparently wanting to involve themselves in the Israeli elections to overthrow Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu making a statement just today saying that he is in it to win it and he will not stop until victory, as he continues to talk to the IDF soldiers, that they are in it to completely wipe out Hamas. No more two-state system for them, because Hamas continues to be that terrorist organization. Democrats not liking that one a whole lot either. So, that being said, we have much to discuss on that front. Then, of course, there's a new far-right Republican group, conservative movement, starting in the United States. And I have to ask you the question, are you part of it? Are you part of this new conservative movement? We'll get to that in a second. Before we do, though, I want to start off with this because I find this kind of interesting.
What's trending today?
It's about a 2-minute audio clip, so it's kind of long, so bear with me, but I think it's worth doing because I, as you know, on this program, we like to have a little bit more fun, even on the more serious, a little bit tougher, a little bit more hardcore conversations, if you want to put it that way, that are very serious and very intense, very deep. We like to at least lighten up the mood a little bit and have some fun on the program. And you have to do that once in a while. I don't know what you're talking about, but I've heard at least that I'm sarcastic on occasion. And I don't know why I would be sarcastic. I don't know who would actually do such a thing. But nonetheless, I've heard that I'm somewhat sarcastic on this program, and I find it to be a great relief for a little bit of comedy and to lighten the mood a little bit and to mock the other side, because most of the time, the other side of the aisle doesn't get the mockingness when we try to be satirical. That being said, there's a comedian out there. I don't know if you've heard of the name of the individual by the name of Scott Shamblin. And he's somewhat politically involved. He's out in the state of Colorado. You can find him on the Tweety at Scott Shamblin, but he calls himself a fertilizing person, not a birthing person, but a fertilizing person. Now, I've never heard that term before, but well done on that one. That's what I consider myself. Now, I now associate myself not as a birthing person, but as a fertilizing person is what I guess men are. But was speaking in Colorado in a committee where, and this is a couple years old apparently, but they were talking about some type of abortion bill in the city of Denver or in the state of Colorado. And as the satirical stand-up comedian and fertilizing person that he is, had to make a comment on this bill and said this.
Thank you. Chairperson and honorable members of the committee, thank you for the privilege to speak today. My name is Scott Shamblin, he, him. I'm a proud Democrat and especially proud of our great history. While I am not a birthing person, I am a fertilizing person, and I oppose this bill. The very idea that such a bill would be proposed is an act of violence on birthing and fertilizing persons alike. It is a threat to our way of life. It is a threat to my way of life. I want to start by telling you of my lived experience. In the last 2 years, I've personally seen how this issue is a birthing person's issue. 7 of my partners over the last 2 years became pregnant. 7. And you know what? Babies are the woman's issue, and they took care of their issues appropriately. How, you might ask? Through abortion. Had I not had this option, I would be a parent to at least 7 different children with 7 different birthing mothers. This is unacceptable. It would ruin me financially and completely destroy my self-indulgent way of life. If abortion becomes illegal, I will be unable to continue exercising my freedoms without consequence and actually be held accountable for my actions. I am fortunate to have had a Darwinian education. It is immoral to painfully prolong the survival of the weak when we could remove them from the equation to accelerate our evolutionary progress. I am a proud supporter of Planned Parenthood's legacy. It's doing exactly as our foremother, Margaret Sanger, peace be upon her, designed it to do, to keep the poor, undesirable, genetically inferior populations down by intentionally putting Planned Parenthoods in communities dominated by the genetically inferior. We have successfully crumbled these communities. It is good and merciful to abort pregnancies that won't have an easy life. A life of financial struggle, mental health issues, physical disabilities, discrimination, systemic racism, and any discomfort at all is not a life worth living. We should not allow someone to live if they cannot live, laugh, love their best life. This is the democratic way. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. All hail Gorlok the Destroyer.
I love it. You know, the sad part is that if a Democrat was actually listening to that audio bit, they would agree with all that and just wonder why we're giggling at this. Wonder why this is actually a funny piece of satire, because this is how stupid the arguments are from the other side of the aisle. Because they honestly, even though they don't openly say that publicly, deep down, that's really how they feel about the abortion issue. So well done. That was, I know it's a little bit older, but well done on that. Let's do it one more time, shall we? Because that's what we need. Sometimes the best way to stop a bully is to point and laugh at them and make them embarrassed. And that's what we have to do to the Democrat Progressive Party, which I find a very tactful way and fun way to do that, especially here on the radio airwaves for you. All right.
What's trending
today? By the way, I found that audio piece on TikTok, so don't get mad at me. I was scrolling through TikTok when I saw that, because TikTok's so evil that it had that. But it was actually the page TikTok, the liberals of TikTok. This was the TikTok, or the liberals of Denver is the page or the channel that was on the TikTok site. So anyway, let's get into what's trending today. Speaking of the attacks from each side of the aisle and trying to be sarcastic, there's a piece out of the Politico, and I want to read a piece of this to you. Because they always have to find a new way. It's always kind of like the gun issue or the social issues or the economic issue. It's always a new angle they have to approach to where they always try to kick us back on our heels. We always have to play defense and always have to find new creative ways to defend our positions because they find new tactful and out there, out of the world type of arguments to try and pursue their agendas. And sometimes you just have to shake your head a little bit. If you remember a few weeks ago, at the end of February, the Conservative Political Action Conference was happening in Washington, D.C. And at the end of it, they always do a straw poll and they release the numbers and the polls of all the questions that they asked are released. One of the questions was your favorite or most conservative or your favorite elected official in each chamber. And in the Senate, surprisingly, the freshman J.D. Vance from the state of Ohio was ranked as the most favorite conservative or senator at the Conservative Political Action Conference. And being the fact that he's gaining so much momentum as the young conservative face, which again, I reiterate that the fact that the Republican Party is doing a phenomenal job right now of finding new fresh blood to help represent the Republican Party and the conservative movement, that we're not just trying to hold on to the old guard and allow them to run everything and suppress any type of new generation coming in to represent. We're doing a fantastic job of that. And we need to keep it up. Democrats are right now horrible at it, which is why outside of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and everybody, Joe Biden, obviously, they don't have anybody that can really carry that mantle that they've worked so hard for over the past few decades. J.D. Vance, being a freshman, is one of those new up-and-comers. So, rightfully so, the media has to find a way to go after him. Here's a headline that I found on Politico.com. Is there something more radical than MAGA? J.D. Vance is dreaming it. Oh, my. Here's what the article has to say. I want to read part of this to you. And, of course, they have to start it off with a story, set the scene, set the tone, try to get you immersed into it. So we're going to do the theater of the mind for a minute here on the radio and read this. J.D. Vance arrived at Saddle Up Saloon, a Western-themed bar 30 miles outside of Manchester, dressed for the part, blue jeans, pale blue button-down, and bright red MAGA hat. As he grabbed the mic and took his place in front of the Trump 2024 backdrop, he slid seamlessly into a stream of classically Trumpian attacks on Joe Biden, on the liberal elites who want to send American jobs to China and American troops to Ukraine, on the radical Democrats who allow inflation to wreck the economy and immigrants to flood the country, on the liberal media who lie about it all. Quote, if you listen to the media, they will just tell you inflation crisis of Joe Biden is over. He goes on to say to the Trump supporters who sipped beer around tables made of wood barrels on the Friday before the presidential primary in the state of New Hampshire. Okay, so you get the scene, right? They set the whole scene here. Andy, what does this have to do with a new movement in the conservatives? It's MAGA, right? Oh, no. According to the media, there is now a new movement rising upon us that goes even beyond Donald Trump, even beyond the Make America Great Again movement. It is the young, conservative, edgy, elite white Republicans that are taking the conservative populist movement to an entirely new level. What do you mean, Andy? Well, I'm going to ask you, we got to take a break here. So the radio tease for you. When we come back, I'm going to read this of what his agenda is, what the movement J.D. Vance is doing. And is this a new radical extremist conservative movement by the edgy young conservatives like J.D. Vance, myself, and so many others that are in the millennial generation? Or is it conservatism? Is it basic 101 conservatism that we stand for and that we're trying to bring back in this country? More on this when we come back for a Friday on The Voice of Reason.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
I love how this generation always tries to say that everything is new. Everything, we're just going to reinvent the wheel and just call it new. We have new movies, even though it's the same storylines that we had for movies 50 years ago. You know, the quote-unquote new age spirituality. There's really not anything new about that one as well. And now you're part of the new right. Did you know that? If you're young and if you're conservative and you're edgy, then you're part of the new right is what they're calling this MAGA movement. That's beyond the MAGA movement, by the way. It's not Donald Trump. It's not the Make America Great Again. It's not the wearing the red hat. It is now the J.D. Vance, the young generation that's taking the conservative populism and turning it into the quote-unquote new right. That's how they're going to demonize this. According to Politico, as they set the stage, did they do a good job? Set the tone for the theater of the mind of how you perceive J.D. Vance at a rally in the saloon bar and the Western wear, and everybody's sipping on beer and sitting there sitting on barrels and watching him getting ready for Donald Trump to come up on stage in New Hampshire. This is coming into the New Hampshire primary from a few weeks ago, that now this is the new right movement that J.D. Vance has started, according to the PoliticoStory.com. But J.D. Vance's new identity as the MAGA militant has existed alongside and at times served to obscure another influential role that Vance has taken into Washington. He's apparently a MAGA militant. I didn't know that he actually picked up arms and physically fought somebody, but he's a militant now. All right, good to know. In certain conservative circles, Vance has emerged as the new standard bearer of the, quote, new right, a loose movement of young, edgy, and elite conservatives trying to take the ideological revolution that began under Trump, including his overt embrace of nationalism. All right, again, hold on. Read these point by point and see, is this conservatism or is this new conservatism? They're trying to take the ideological revolution that began under Trump, including the overt embrace of nationalism, his hardline stance on immigration, his vocal opposition of U.S. involvement in foreign conflicts like Ukraine, and his overt skepticism towards certain liberal democratic principles in an even more radical position. Unlike Trump's more conventional Republican followers, Vance's new right cohort sees Trump as merely the first step in a broader populist nationalist revolution that's already reshaping America, the American right, and if they get their way, will soon reshape America as a whole. Let's go through these point by point, shall we? Because, again, let's check the boxes. Are you a conservative or are you a new conservative? Because this is how they're going to label the conservative, the young generation, the ones that are holding the mantle. You got to remember that we actually have a party that, unlike the Democrats, have invested in the ability for the young generation to actually hold up the mantle. I'm 35 years old. I'm on the radio that's growing with stations all over the country and people actually listening to me babble on the radio each and every day, 6 days a week. That's a new generation there. It's not all the quote-unquote old individuals. It's not the elite individuals. It's the young generation that's taken up the mantle, putting our spin on it based on our generational experiences and being able to continue to push on with conservative messages. That's kind of rare. You don't hear Democrats doing that. You have like the Young Turks and some of these other ones, but they don't have a lot of movement. They're in their echo chambers for sure, and they obviously aren't getting the support that some of the older generations of progressives have gotten. But pushing for embracing nationalism, I still wonder, and we talked about it on the program yesterday, I'm still baffled of the fact that we've now turned the name and term of nationalism into a bad thing. Yes, even with all of our flaws, even with all of our sketchy history, the United States is still the greatest nation on the face of the earth. And I will never say anything otherwise. Do we have our problems? Yes. Is our federal government probably evil? Yeah. But the nation as a whole, what we stand for, the American flag, patriotism, yeah, that's still the greatest thing. That apparently is part of the new right. Embracing nationalism, the hardline stance on immigration, like not letting illegals just waltz over our borders just willy-nilly and opposing our infiltration of U.S. foreign policy. These apparently are hard right and new right stances that are being taken to another level under the conservative populist nationalist movement.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When reason meets radio, this is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into the program on the home stretch here, last half hour of the show. So apparently now that we know we're part of the new right movement, which is the conservative populist nationalist movement, I find that quite fascinating. We're going to shift gears a little bit here as we get to our next guest. He is the author of The Great Campaign Against the Great Reset. We sat down with him a little bit earlier today as we sat with Jason Jones. Jason, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Andy. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, you bet. All right, let's talk about where we're at right now, because we haven't heard much news. We haven't heard much conversation about the funding, but we also haven't heard much out of Ukraine coming out either than they're beginning to lose ground. They're beginning to lose support and they're desperate. Is that true? Are we really seeing Russia begin to make some ground in this ongoing conflict?
Yeah, we are. In fact, just yesterday, my organization, the Vulnerable People Project, has teams on the ground in Ukraine, and I've been to Ukraine several times since the invasion. A report from one of my team members yesterday was that morale is low, that Russia's beginning to take ground, and the tide is beginning to turn. Of course, in the first weeks after the invasion, there was an opportunity for a ceasefire, and the West, you know, lured Ukraine into deeper and deeper waters in this billions of dollar grift, really at the expense of the people of Ukraine. So now we're in a situation where it appears that the war is lost. And General Milley said, if you remember, just 2 months after the war began, when he was asked, do you really think Ukraine can win? And General Milley's response was, we don't need Ukraine to win. What we need is a quagmire. And I think that's, in my new book, The Great Campaign Against the Great Reset, it was in Ukraine where I really saw how brutal and vicious and anti-human our ruling elite are. Because you can go to hospitals in Ukraine, and I visited a hospital that was an old Soviet prison. It was a huge old Soviet prison. And in every room were several boys missing arms, missing legs. And, you know, this is the cost of the grift.
Yeah. It is concerning. If they're losing ground and if it's potentially lost right now, let's just say that we end up spending some money to send more resources over to Ukraine. Would that help at the time? And I guess so many conservatives have this concern about if we need to, you know, make America first. We need to make that priority. And I understand it. And I've supported that as well. I know other nations and over in Europe have been trying to support Ukraine at the same time. Are we the only one sending support, and why is our funding and our support so vital to this success to try and keep Vladimir Putin at bay?
No, that's not true. And I get really frustrated with a lot of the commentary on the right regarding Ukraine, because it really plays into the deep state's campaign. We really should have been working to advance the interests of the people of Ukraine. If they could have won the war, win the war. If they can't win the war, a ceasefire and get the best deal possible for the people of Ukraine. But what General Milley made very clear is, and this is what many conservatives feel instinctively, and that's why they're repulsed by the whole thing, is that this was never about the people of Ukraine. This was about advancing the perceived interests of Germany, the other NATO countries, and the United States at the expense of the people of Ukraine. And so they're frustrated by that. And I completely understand that frustration. But what they need to understand is that when they say, we're sending all of this money to Ukraine, we're not sending money to Ukraine. We're sending weapons to Ukraine, paid for with our money, to be put into the hands of young Ukrainian boys who are going to die. And this idea that other countries aren't engaged, I mean, I think number two in casualties in this war have been Poland. You know, young men are many, many, many companies of young men from Poland have gone and fought and died in Ukraine to defend Ukraine from Russian aggression. So there's a lot of misinformation. I understand the frustration from the right, but one thing that they also need to understand is that when Russia takes ground, the first thing they do is they close the evangelical churches. And this is a story that has not been told. In occupied Ukraine, every evangelical church has been closed. In occupied Ukraine, most of the Catholic churches have been closed. And in occupied Ukraine, if you're an Orthodox church unaligned with Moscow, the priests have been tortured and killed. So there's a lot at stake, and sadly, it just as we saw in Afghanistan, the powers of the world are not actually interested in the plight of the people of Ukraine, but they're advancing their own interests.
Yeah, it is concerning. Now, you said that you've obviously been over there working on humanitarian issues, seeing some of the devastation that's going on. Talk about some of the stuff you mentioned, some of the hospitals, but what else have you seen over there? And with I was not aware that churches were being closed, which is a major cause for concern, because Vladimir Putin says that he's religious and that he's Christian and they have all these great churches in Russia, but they're closing them down in Ukraine. That's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, and Ukraine has more Orthodox churches than Russia. Ukraine is the most conservative Christian country of the former Soviet republics. It has the largest pro-life movement in Europe. In fact, it was a great tragedy. When I spoke in June in Ukraine at a conference, there was a young man. He had been the leader of the pro-life movement in Western Ukraine. He had been actually out of Ukraine going to college, but as soon as the invasion happened, he returned home, became a special forces officer, spoke at a pro-life, pro-family event with me in Kyiv in June, and 11 days later, he died on the front. So what we're seeing is, Ukraine's losing a generation. And, you know, I'm hoping with this presidential election year coming up, we're going to have a real serious discussion on what's been happening in Ukraine. Because like you said, the people in the United States are not seeing the true story. We're not seeing the cost of this war. Yeah. We're not seeing the real human cost of this war. We're not seeing the cost to the people of Ukraine. And but again, I wrote this book because with my work on the front lines of these wars for the past 20 years, I was in Iraq with the rise of ISIS. I've been in Afghanistan for the past 2 years, serving the widows and orphans of our Afghan allies who were killed in action, and evacuating our former allies who were abandoned by the Biden administration. I've been able to see up close and personal the brutality of the deep state and their thoughtlessness to the human cost of their policies. But no place can this be better seen than in Ukraine. And tragically, I think it's going to become very clear to everyone the real human cost of this war for the past 2 years, over two years.
Yeah, it's a cause for concern. We're talking with Jason Jones. He's author of the book, The Great Campaign Against the Great Reset. What's your thoughts on the interview that Tucker Carlson was able to do with the sit-down with Vladimir Putin? When he did this, it was surprisingly near 2 hours long and talked about this entire history, which I found kind of odd but kind of fascinating at the same time, about the history of the whole region and how they came to be and how they were fine. And really, it came down to the ultimate point that he said that he wanted nothing more than the couple regions that were near the border of Russia, that he wanted to fight Nazism because apparently the Ukrainians were upholding Nazism and fascism in the nation, and that he wanted to keep a border between NATO. What's your take on all that?
Yeah, no, well, definitely. I mean, his point to NATO ever encroaching east had some weight to it. His history lesson was quite absurd. I mean, anyone from Ukraine or from Russia would have laughed at his history lesson. I want to say this. I'm glad that Tucker Carlson interviewed Putin. The real tragedy is this hasn't been the 100th interview with Putin by our media. It's quite striking. It was such a big deal because this hadn't been done, which is striking, and it tells you where we are. But there was a lot of foolishness. You know, his history lesson was a myth. And in fact, it was a myth in inverse, because Russia really came out of Ukraine. But he left out some very important things. For example, he left out the Holodomor. When talking about the history between Russia and Ukraine, and you start in the 600s, I turned to my wife. I said, my ancestors were still in Norway. They hadn't invaded France yet, let alone headed to England. You know, this is where he starts. So, okay, where are my ancestors in the story? But then he leaves out the forced famine in the 1930s, where Russia forcibly starves over 6 million Ukrainians. And if you want to understand the relationship between Ukraine and Russia, you really have to start with the Holodomor. In fact, it's important to remember that when Ukraine voted for independence, even those oblasts that Putin wants, those Russian-speaking oblasts to the east, voted overwhelmingly to be a part of Ukraine. And even though they didn't speak Ukrainian, those oblasts to the east also voted at the same time to make Ukrainian their official language. They didn't even speak Ukrainian. And why is that? Because even in those eastern oblasts, there was a real antipathy towards Russia and a fear of Russia. And so Putin's little myth leaves out really one of the most important parts of the story. And then again, talking about religious freedom, Russia has this long history of religious freedom. I mean, that's absurd. We all know the history of the pogroms. And sadly, and it's quite striking, that the brutality towards the evangelical church by Putin is not being covered in the media. I think the mainstream media doesn't care that Christians are being brutalized in occupied Ukraine. And it may not fit the narrative for some on the right. But the real tragedy is that Ukraine is the most Christian country of all the former republics, with the largest, most active pro-family, pro-life movement. I was in Ukraine this past June. In June, the only rainbow flag I saw in Ukraine in June was at the Canadian embassy. And when I crossed the border back into Poland, of course, there were rainbow flags everywhere. I went there from Poland to Germany, rainbow flags everywhere. So this idea that Ukraine is this hard left country, it's the opposite. It's a country of conservative farmers, Christian farmers. Our State Department and Germany are taking the opportunity of the war to try to radically change Ukrainian culture. And it's quite frustrating. So we as conservatives should stand with the Christians in Ukraine against Russian, not only against Russian aggression, but also against the aggression of sort of Western imperialism that's seeking to change their culture.
Interesting perspective for sure. That was, again, Jason Jones, author of the book, The Great Campaign Against the Great Reset. We'll break some of that down here coming up right around the corner. One more segment left for a Friday right here on The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, it is. Welcome back into it. Last couple of minutes on the program. Thanks again to Jason Jones coming on. Interesting perspective for sure on this Ukrainian-Russian conflict and our ongoing battle. Now, again, there have been, as far as I'm aware, there's not been a lot of new bills talking about how we need to be funding, how we need to be supporting. They're trying. If you remember, we did the immigration bill a few weeks ago that didn't work out, and Ukrainian and Israeli funding was attached to that. That didn't pass, and that's why Democrats were so angry. They wanted it to pass. It wasn't because immigration here. I mean, remember, the executive branch has full authority right now to do what they want to with immigration. We already have laws on the books. You can shut it down. You can process. You can open it up. You can do whatever you want to do. It's not about the actual enforcement there. It was about the Ukrainian and Israeli funding. That was the sole purpose of why they wanted that bill to go. And they used the front of we need to shut down the border or have the ability to shut down the border through the executive branch. So therefore, we need to pass this immigration bill that has the Ukrainian funding attached to it. That was the only reason why they wanted that bill. And that's the only reason why they were upset about that bill as well. Imagine, if you will, you've imported 10 million illegal aliens over the past 3 years, and now all of a sudden you want the authority to shut down the border when we even found out that you're trying to bus in and that you have flown in over 300,000 illegal migrants in the past year alone that didn't even touch the southern border because you openly shipped them to different parts of the nation. And now you're concerned about immigration as a major problem and that you want the authority to shut down the border through passing this immigration bill. It's all a farce, and we know it is. It's a complete phony lie. And it's almost comical to watch them try to dance around this. So we know that the only reason they wanted it was the Ukrainian funding, because that was attached to it. Then they tried that after that immigration bill failed. That obviously didn't go anywhere. So they're still trying to ram through as much as they possibly can. And we're not here to say that we shouldn't be supporting our allies. That includes Israel or Ukraine. What we are saying, though, is that if we're going to try and stop an invasion of a border elsewhere, we should probably work to stop the invasion of our border here in the United States, which, by the way, according to Newsmax.com, Biden, while he continues on his campaign trail talking about his, quote, investing in America plan, that he's now come out with his plan for immigration if he gets reelected in 2025, saying that he plans to deport a total annual amount of 125,000 migrants for the fiscal year of 2025. Yeah. Yeah, 125,000 in the year. Now, sounds pretty good, right? Sounds pretty decent. Now, obviously, we've seen the migrants coming into the country illegally have been on the decrease. In fact, the numbers from January show that they were down near 50% from what they were from the month of December. Might be because of part of the year, might be because the state of Texas actually tried to enforce their own borders and the Democrats lost their absolute minds. But nonetheless, something worked to where we saw a decrease of near 50% of illegal border crossings for the month of January compared to the previous year. So I find that interesting. And Joe Biden now saying that he would deport 125,000 migrants for the fiscal year of 2025. Now, here's the interesting piece. That number is half of the removals that were conducted for the year of 2019. Yeah, 2019. Well, that's half then of 50% for Democrats that are slow on the other side of the aisle. That's 50% of what we deported in 2019. We're now going to deport half of those numbers, which is 125,000, which would make that 250,000 in 2019. 125,000. If you look at the numbers compared to the 10 million that have illegally crossed in this nation since the Biden administration took hold in 2020, you know how long that would take to deport all the illegal migrants? Yeah, that's, again, if we shut down the border right now, we don't allow a single new one to come in, then we start deporting. If you did that plan, it would take 80 years to deport all the illegal migrants that are in the country that have just come in under the Biden administration in the past 3 years. So it's they're starting to recognize that immigration is probably the number one issue that's on the minds of many voters, Republicans and Democrats and independents and wicked wild free thinkers alike, that immigration's number one. That's why the media tried to laugh it off and,
oh, Virginia, West Virginia, number one issue is immigration.
Look at that border between those two. Because they don't want to come to the admittance and the acceptance that this is a national crisis and that people are a little upset. So what do? They come out with their plan. We now have our immigration plan. We're going to deport 125,000 people. And the media is going to run with it and say that the Biden administration's cracking down, man. They have their plan. They know how to stop this immigration flow. They're going to slow it down if they only had a bill to pass. And we're going to start deporting migrants out of the country. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see how well that works. They're not counting on the fact that the last year of the Trump administration, we deported double that amount when the border was already sealed, or at least sealed way more than what it is already right now. Oh, how the campaigns lie to your face and so many on the other side just blindly go along with it. But that's coming from one of those new far-right Republicans, right? Those new right individuals, those populist, nationalist conservatives for the young generation taking things to an extremist level. Have a great weekend. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio.